D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey everybody, welcome to Geeksters episode 116. Geeksters is a show where we talk about the life of a tech. What do we do it, how do we survive, how do we keep from going gray? Sometimes that's even harder than other things. But we just come on, we talk about things, but today we're kind of short-staffed. Fred's mowing the grass, Tim's hanging out with his daughter playing softball. I have softball pictures tonight with my daughter. So it's just Mitch and I. Mitch and I are going to talk and see what's going on. He's got some Linux news. I've got some Windows news. Cats and dogs sleeping together. It's craziness. The world is backwards. So, hey, Mitch, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. Had a busy weekend. I had to do an upgrade on a Windows XP machine. It went pretty well.
So did you uninstall Windows XP? And then I'm assuming you went from XP to 7.
Yes, I had to. And he only had 1 gig of RAM. Oh. So it's an old machine, but it does take DDR2, and he has a dual core 64-bit processor. So I knew it wouldn't be a problem, but I wanted to have it like at least like 4 gigs of RAM. So I looked on Craigslist, and I even posted on there looking for DDR2 6400 PC2 6400, and so I found a guy on there close to here, and he sold me a pair. Two sticks at 2 gigs apiece for $25.
Oh.
And OCZ, and they work fine.
Were those two 1 gig sticks?
Two gig sticks by two sticks. So for a total of 4.
For $25.
$25. Mm-hmm.
Wow. I get them for about $90 here. Brand new.
Yeah. Well, this is used. I mean, I could have got them for like 50, 60 some new online somewhere, but I wanted them now, you know?
Well, yeah, and at $25, that's a great price.
Yeah, and it's working well, and he was telling me about it. I gave it back to him yesterday, and he was telling me about it, and it's not going to be that much of a learning curve from XP, because I set it up with all, turned off the Arrow. Arrow won't even play on it anyway, because you don't have the dedicated card on there, but I turned everything off, and so he's pretty satisfied.
That's cool, and you did the actual upgrade, not the reinstall?
Oh, no, I did a clean install.
Oh, you did a clean install.
Yeah,
okay.
I took everything off the hard drive. And
very nice.
I don't think I've ever did an upgrade over top of a OS. Never.
The only time I've ever done an upgrade is when you can buy a Windows 7 upgrade license, and then you install Windows 7, you don't register it, and then you upgrade the Windows 7, mm-hmm. and it then will install, and I'll let you register it.
That's what I did.
But so you did do it. You did do an upgrade, but
But it was still wound up being a clean install.
Oh yeah, no, I
actually no. I had to, but what it said on there, and I didn't know it. I got the thing here still. I thought I had to do an upgrade, but you can't do an upgrade over XP. You have to do a clean install. But it sees it; it's illegal and everything, so it lets me do the clean install. I only had to do the one install.
Got it. And when you But when you backed his data, what did you use?
He had like a 320 gig hard drive, and he had about 5 gigs used up in 6 years.
Oh,
he used a thumb drive. I mean, a little, it was.
So you just, manually moved, documents and favorites.
Yeah, because it wasn't. Yeah, he's just very. He mostly he does some stuff. He's like a Sons of Confederate Soldiers. He does a little bit of stuff on there, mm-hmm. and that's about it. And email and browse a little bit.
Well, the reason I ask is we've talked, a couple times about FABS auto backup here, mm-hmm. and I just came across another program earlier this week called Backrex. Have you heard that? Backrex, B-A-K-R-E-X. It kind of does the same. It looks like it does the same thing as FABS auto backup, Internet Explorer, Outlook, Windows Mail. A couple of things that stood out to me where this does things like Outlook Express, MS Money, your browser, Chrome browser, Firefox browser, Thunderbird, SeaMonkey, Windows users profiles. So I used FABS before and I really liked it because it does a great job. I'm just curious if this does maybe more. So I just thought I'd throw it out there. It's called Backrex.
Like, so you did like or didn't try it yet?
I have not tried this. Gotcha. It can be found at backsettings.com. I just thought I'd come across it and thought, well, this looks kind of interesting because the problem I run into, and it's been lately, I've worked on some home clients, and what's happening is they will have something like Microsoft Mail or Outlook Express, and especially with the Windows XP to Windows 7 migration now, a lot of people in XP used Outlook Express.
Right.
So the problem you run into is how do you export that? If it's an Outlook, no problem. You just do a PST and a PST back in and you're
right,
good.
Right, you're good.
But in Outlook Express, you can't do that. And a long, long time ago, I used to have a program, and I can't even remember what the program is anymore, where you could back up Outlook Express. And I mean, a long time ago, I think, gosh, it was 7-8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I paid for it. It was one of those programs that I paid for and then ended up using for that. But
yeah, there were some freeware ones too that would do the similar same thing, and I can't. But it's been so long. Fortunately, these people use Verizon, you know, webmail. So
oh yeah, well, you get that one client, and they're like, oh, I need to upgrade my computer. What do you use for email? Oh, Gmail. Awesome.
Yeah, really, really.
I'm just doing a quick look at Fab's auto backup to see if it does anything like the Gmail and stuff like that. Outlook Express. Thanks.
I haven't used a Windows client for email in I don't know how long.
Yeah, I don't see anything right off. Wait, there it is. Personal folders, web browsers, mails. It does do Outlook Express and stuff like that. So I have a purchased copy of Fabs. And Grant Tech in the forum says, Fab is great. We use it all the time. Load into Windows Live and then import into Outlook. So Windows Live is that Windows, the renamed Outlook Express. And right. Thanks, Grant. That's very helpful. So Fabs, Backrex, anything of those kind of applications like that where, especially as you're doing migrations from 7 or XP to 7, you may want to back stuff up. Of course, if it's like you, Mitch, where I've, you know, I do also kind of go the manual route sometimes where I will just manually back up the user's just data files.
Yeah, it was so little. I mean, and I don't know if I ever use Fabs, you know, because I don't, you know, I just do this, you know, on the side. I don't do it a whole lot. And I'm not sure if I ever use Fabs. I always did it manually. And fortunately, yeah. You know, the people I deal with, they don't have a whole ton of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I see kind of the extremes of it. I'll see an end user that has very little, and I'll see then corporate clients who have a very lot, but they're back end on the server. So you redo their computer and you reconnect their server, and, you know, their network gets reconnected automatically to share drives, and there's their data. So, you know, by then you have hosted Exchange and the email just comes back in. So I kind of, there is definitely a place for both of those products, and I've used Fabs before. So I think they are really, they're both good, but as people are looking into some new products, there's some ideas for that. I had a UPS call from the bowels of Hades a couple weeks ago. So we, as people know, if you're listening to this show, we could not record last week. There was some scheduling issues, and so we are here now on a Tuesday, as always, 3:30 PM Pacific, 6:30 Eastern, where I think it was like Wednesday or Thursday of the previous week. So now it's been almost 2 weeks since this call. So I have a client and they use the UPS WorldShip program. And what it is you can, it's kind of like your stamps.com stuff.
We use it at work. And matter of fact, I wound up installing it on the machine for the girl.
Okay. So yeah. So for the people for listening, what it is you put in all your data. You basically buy credits with UPS. You put in the data. It prints out the label. You slap it on the box. UPS picks it up. You're good to go. So, it's their shipping program. So you can either install it a couple ways. You can install it locally on the machine, within admin. So it's just all the databases right there. Or you can install it on the network. And on the network, what happens is the data sits on the server. But on your local machine, you still have to have an admin user. So you have the database gets installed on the local machine with the admin user. A copy of it sits on the network. And that way, in case you install another computer that's just a workstation, it actually attaches to the server one, but proxies all the data back and forth from the admin computer. I found it to be a little complicating.
You know how we did it? They gave us a computer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like a Vista machine, and the software was installed on there. But it's on our network and not really on our network.
Right.
You know, right. You know, it's there. I mean, we can see, well, it has its own printer. We got one of, you know, I think we're using a Zebra printer to print those labels. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. Well, what was happening with this one is that they were moving from 7 or XP to 7. And so the old Zebra printer was a parallel port, you know, the big long port. Mm-hmm. And the new 7 computers didn't have that. We had to get a new printer. Well, if we're going to move the printer, we should probably move the database because that Windows 7 machine is going to, or Windows, I'm sorry, Windows XP machine is going to go away. So let's just move the database to the server. And we ended up doing all this. And I called UPS WorldChip. And the first time I got a lady, and she was very nice and helpful, and then I was done with that question, so I moved on. I called back again and got this gentleman. And when you're dealing with people, it doesn't matter really. Be consistent. And what I mean by that is, as every one of us, if you're listening to the show or have heard, we all deal with customers, and sometimes it's even over the phone. You are really walking that customer through an issue that they're having, and you have to be decisive. So I get this guy on the phone. And I think 90% of his vocabulary was the word yes. So what would happen is I would ask him, okay, do I install this as an admin or a workstation? And he would say yes. I said, okay, but I want to put this on the server. And he'd go yes. And then I would then click on something and I would move forward and I would confirm with him. Now I want to put this on the server and I want to do all this other stuff and I want to print from the local machine because we can't, you know, we're not going to print from the server. And he goes yes. And it gets to the point where it doesn't matter what I tell him, he says yes.
Are you sure it wasn't a bot?
I'm positive this guy was not a bot. But I was getting so frustrated with him because he would not make a decision. And I told him, you can't just say yes to all my questions. Either it's going to be on the network or it's not. Either it's going to be as a workstation or it's going to be an administrator. And he says yes. And I said, I kid you not. So I'm describing to him my problem and why I'm getting frustrated with his answers because all he's saying is yes. And in the process of saying that, I said, I need you to give me a definite answer. And he says, yes.
It's a good thing Tim's not here.
Oh my gosh.
He'd be on the floor.
Oh, and I thought, I said, thank you very much for your time. And I hung up and I ended up just going outside, taking a couple deep breaths of air and just relaxing. Came back in because the lady on the person that was sitting there next to me, and the employee was like, what's going on? I said, he just keeps saying yes. And she's like, I spent about 40 minutes on the phone with this gentleman for him to just say yes to me every time. So went outside, got some fresh air, came back inside. Yeah, yes. Came back inside, called again. This time, not only this time I would assume to be an engineer because I was asking, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm asking questions at level, you know, 4 or 5, maybe 6, right? And he's answering them at level 10. Well, you see the back-end configuration of the COM file and the proper thing of the, you know, and the database speed and the way that it, I'm like, oh my God. Did I have this set up correctly? Then he goes, yes. And they have the back end of the thing. So it was kind of funny because I ended up getting one guy who was just really not even reading from the book. I think his one book had one answer. And then the next guy I got was an engineer, but he did answer my questions and he was a lot more helpful. But it made me think, you know, is that what I sound like? You know, is that how I want to present myself when I'm talking on the phone to a client? When a client calls me up on the phone and they have questions and they ask me like 4 or 5 questions in a row because they're having a dilemma. You know, do I take the time to just say, you know, do I just say yes? Or do I take, or it may not even be yes. It may just be, uh-huh.
What's the answer?
Right. They want the answer. So they
want to know. No. What is your answer?
Well, I would say take the time and ask and answer each of their questions. It may be a couple words per question, but really sit down with them or even just realize, you know, they may be having, say, internet issues or the keyboard isn't working right, but they're asking you, is the internet down? What about my router? What about the wireless? What about, you know, and you just have to say, okay, let's take it back to another level and I guess what I'm trying to say is just really be receptive to what your clients are asking you exactly. And not just because maybe the questions they're asking you are not, they may just be buzzwords that they've heard.
You can't treat them like, for lack of a better word, idiots.
Yeah, really. And I felt like this guy, I mean, I was kind of blown away by his response because I was really, really frustrated with that. So, but it got resolved. But yeah, I just wanted to something that made me think about was really, you know, our clients may come to us with very simple questions that we think are very simple questions, but to them, it is something that's pretty important. And so make sure that we treat them with respect.
Exactly. One thing I did do wrong with this machine this weekend, I backed up everything but his bookmarks. So not that he had a whole ton of them, but.
Chrome or Firefox or IE?
Both.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're moving stuff over in IE, it works out really nice. You just grab the folder, mm-hmm. the favorites folder.
Right.
But yeah, in Chrome, you have to actually go into the application and do a backup. So, that's where things like that, I probably should start using something like Fabs or this Backrex a little bit more, because if I just run it, it's going to back up any Chrome or Firefox bookmarks. It's already going to back up the IE bookmarks. So it's kind of an all-in-one, you know, it will help remind me that it just does it automatically because it scours it, and, you know, so.
Right.
And you may end up just getting, you know, the generic Chrome bookmarks, but at least you grab the Chrome bookmarks.
Right.
No. One of the things I did a couple weeks ago was take Aaron Turnbull. He's on Google Plus, and we mentioned him a couple times. And I don't know, did I mention about the Kit Kat on my Kindle Fire?
I don't think so.
Okay, so he sent me an email or a Google Plus posting. I had taken my Kindle Fire first generation and I put Jelly Bean on it, and it hadn't worked very. It was okay, but it was really kind of buggy and kind of slow. So he came across a site that a company called N2AOS has their own proprietary one-click installer for Kindle for KitKat on the Kindle Fire for the first generation.
Right.
So it's $20, and you had to go and get their download. You had to create an account, buy it, download their one, and click
install. You didn't have to root or anything, or
well, it does it all for you. So most of the time, so like when I had to do my Kindle Fire originally, you had to, you rooted it, had to install some like twerp, and then you had to open up, look for the zip file, run the zip file, it then reboots and it basically loads that, this one, it probably does something along those lines, but it does it all together. So what I had to do was take my, take the Kindle Fire and actually bring it back down to factory stock. And there's a great URL, YouTube videos where this one gentleman shows you how to do it, and it's videos and steps, and he walks you through it. I can't remember where it is right now, but, he does a great job with it. So brought it back to stock. Once it's back into stock, go ahead and reload it again, because that then wipes out any of the configuration files you've been messing with. Right. And then plug this in, you run the small executable on a Windows box, it sees your Kindle, and you walk away. And 20 minutes later, you come back, and it's booted in Android with KitKat installed, and it just works really well. It's only 5 gigs, so I've loaded enough applications on it where it feels kind of buggy. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the problems I have with it. The USB loader where you can take like an OTG cable, mm-hmm. and it doesn't work on it. So it's not like I could grab a 64-bit or 64-gig USB and plug it in there and watch videos. It doesn't seem to work. It probably will right now, but it's just right now it doesn't work out very well with that. But it works. I mean, I can run Netflix and Google Plus and Facebook. And, you know, most of the time what I do with that Kindle Fire is I take it with me to conferences. It becomes my Evernote, you know, portable Evernote note taker. I sit here on my desk if I'm having a slow day and I'm working on just documentation. It'll be playing music, or I'll be playing, you know, I'll be watching a video or something. So really, it's my media center for right now. But it's called N2AOS. It says brings KitKat to Kindle Fires. It actually works really, really well. For the $20, I was really impressed with it. And if you have a Kindle Fire first gen and you want to start messing with that, highly recommend it, and very easy.
I have a question. Since you've had Apple or iPhones, and now you're using Android. When you had your iPhone, would that thing get bogged down too when you had a lot of apps on it, or?
It would.
You remember?
It would. It would. Rooting your iPhone or ROMing your Android device. I think either way does it. I mean, my Samsung, I've rooted that. Jailbreaking your iPhone, that's what it's called. I've rooted my Samsung Galaxy S4. That works really well. I've had a couple little issues with it, but nothing too big.
Did you put a different ROM on it, or you just rooted it?
Just rooted it. So I have I've got the stock ROM, and I haven't had the time and the availability to put a non-stock ROM on it, just because I have to be available for my clients. And so it's kind of like,
you don't have any fallbacks or.
Yeah. It's the same reason why I haven't really done anything much with my laptop. I've taken it and I've put another hard drive in it, imaged my old one over, thought about maybe upgrading to Ubuntu 14.04. I spent like half a day doing it on a weekend and then realized it wasn't going to work right and went back to it. But I kind of have to have high availability. So if it doesn't, if it takes quite a bit of time, I have to schedule that out. I can't just, you know, do it because every time I go to just do it, somebody calls and I have to be available.
I think the other day I was telling you in Voxer that I updated to the new Facebook app. Mm-hmm. It was working all right. Then I was getting lockups. It was just locking up on me that for that time. So I uninstalled it, reinstalled it. And then finally I just deleted the data on it, you know, through the app. And it was all right after that. It's been all right after that. But I noticed when, you know, I have my Joy Razor, Motorola Joy Razor. When I rooted and ROM that, you know, it gives me a choice. You know, it's using a Torp. I can boot into stock or to the Cyanogen mod. And, because my stock ROM, it was working terribly. So I said, finally, let me start uninstalling stuff. I mean, when I said I installed everything I could think of, and it's working good now. Stock is working good. So I'm not sure what program was causing all the problems.
Yeah.
But it's working good, actually. But I still like CyanogenMod because it's so lightweight.
Yeah, that is one of the things. I've never put CyanogenMod on there. I think the first time I had my phone was with 4 days before OLF last year.
That's right, right, right.
And so I brought it and I just handed it to Ellis, the door, Ellis Owens, and I'm like, help! I have no idea what I'm doing.
Well, you heard me talking about my contract is going to be up at the end of the month, and they got some sales, really good sales going on now. You can get the S5 for like $100.
Yeah,
I think it's a 2 week sale right now on a 2 year contract. That's pretty good. But I was thinking about just doing away with it and with Verizon, just getting like a cheap old Virgin Mobile and just pay $35 a month. And yeah, I can still do the phone's not going to be the top of the line, whatever I choose, but it's going to do what I want it to do. And I don't know. But then, you know, for $100 and I can get a really top of the line phone, but then I'm paying 70 some dollars a month or whatever it is on my Verizon plan. But I don't know, it's just choices. See, when I'm older, we're saving up to retire and trying to, you know, but then again I still like getting the latest and greatest too, you know.
Oh yeah I think the S5, I followed it a little bit. I'm not in the market at all to upgrade my phone, but I think the S5 has the doesn't have the biometric just like the iPhone 5 with the thumbprint.
It may, I can't remember. I saw a couple of reviews on it, but I was more paying attention to the specs, you know, the processor, quad core, how fast it is, and benchmarking, you know.
Yeah,
I don't need it. I don't download a whole lot of apps. I don't play any games to speak of, and so that's what I'm saying. I could probably do fine with a Virgin Mobile phone. They have. I was looking at the. It's not a 4G, but they have the all. But it's a dual core Snapdragon. That's pretty much all what my Droid, the one I have now, Razer. But it's not a Snapdragon. But the reviews were really good on it. And the only thing bad about those phones, they don't come with onboard storage like 4 gigabytes, telling you can only use one or something like that. But you could put external.
Right. Oh yeah. Well, I think the S4 came with eight. Eight.
More. It's probably came with 16, probably.
16?
Mine came with 16.
I know that, yeah. I put a 64 gig, you know, micro SD card in the back. And so I get used to having all of the storage on that. And then I try to, then I root my Kindle and I'm like, I'm going to throw all of these, you know, because it's the same Google store and I have all of these apps. And so I'm going to throw all these apps on there. And then it's just like, you're full. I'm like, oh, you know, it's not the same.
And, also, you know, I have Comcast. I think you do too, don't you?
I do have Comcast, yeah.
So I was on a plan. I was on a good deal for a year. It went up, and so I get my last bill. I knew it was up around now. It went up like $35. And, of course, my wife, she's like hollering and everything. So you got to call in tomorrow and see if they can do anything. So I called them last Monday, a week ago Monday. And, look, I know I was on a plan. It's over now. But I got to try to get my payments down, you know. And so I have this sports package, which is the NFL channel and a bunch of college channels, sports channels I wouldn't even watch anyway. But that was only going to knock it down $8. Then I could lose some other channels, and that was only going to drop down maybe a total of 18. And then I said to him, because I have my phone, TV, and internet with him. Mm-hmm. So I said to him, suppose I just do internet and phone and just get rid of the TV, because DirecTV, they're always calling me up and giving me, you know, offering me these really good deals. As soon as I said that, he goes, hold on, let me put you on hold for a minute. I'm going to see if I can get you another package deal. So I waited like about a minute or two. He comes back. I'll tell you what we can do. We could put you in this package deal, and we'll give you two more channels. I had premium channels. I had HBO and Star, so they give me Cinemax and Showtime, and we'll drop it down $30. No, this is for a year. And my wife's next to me. I said, you want to do that? Because we do like, I'm satisfied with their service, really. Mm-hmm. And my wife said, oh, okay, yeah, all right, we'll do that. So I'm with them for another year. But I have that Max Plus, whatever they call it, the Super Speed, and they just upgraded.
Nice.
I don't know if I was telling you. So I can get up to 105 down, although that thing my son put in there will only support 100, that Fortinet. But I can still do some tests and get in the 80s and the 90s quite often.
Very nice.
On the wired machines, not on the wireless machines. But we'll do that for a year.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the weekends between shows, I went down to California and deployed a new VPN firewall at a client of mine. His was old. It was an old BFSR 41.
Linksys.
The old original Linksys.
I think.
You know, 802.11b. It wasn't running wireless. So it was just
blue and black down. One.
It was, you know, you see all the routers now and they're so thin. This thing has got to be, you know, 6 inches. You know, big bulky thing. And it was, I remember when they first came out and they were great and solid. I mean, it's been running the firmware on it ended in 2002. So it's just been running and running and running and running. But it was time. It was definitely time. So I went down there and deployed a TP-Link firewall. And before we did that, he said, hey, would you look at this with me? And I said, sure. And he says, you know, I've been thinking about moving to Verizon because right now they just have a plain old telephone system. I don't know who it's through. Their internet's through Comcast. Their phone's through another thing. They're looking at maybe going through Frontier and kind of combining everything. And I don't know much about the phones, but he was showing me the internet speeds. And they were like 15 down, 2 up. I'm like, you know, that's about normal, but let's go ahead and see what you have just to check. And, so we pulled it up and we got about 7 down, 4 up. I was like, oh, okay. Well, we may want to look at that Verizon. I'm not too worried about the up speed as much as the down speed.
Right.
And so I said, well, let's check after we install this firewall, just this new, I mean, this is a gigabit backbone. So whether, you know, if nothing else, at least the gigabit backbone is going to help. And so I pulled out the other one, put the new one in, and actually it went flawless. I was really impressed because I had already done a lot of the pre-configuration here at home on the router. Put it in, turned it on, and everything connected. Had to just cut power boot, you know, a couple switches that are along the building, you know, just to make sure they all connected, you know, normal stuff.
And this was with a TP-Link router, did you say?
Yeah, this is a TP-Link router. Gigabit, WAN, gigabit, LAN, 4 gigabit LANs, and then it has a VPN to it if you want. But it also has, you know, intrusion detection, stuff, you know, nothing. It's definitely not like a WatchGuard firewall or a Sonic wall. It's not a high-end one, but, you know, mostly because those ones you have to buy subscriptions for, and they constantly
exactly.
Yep. Right. This one's just a, you know, like, but it was like $80. Really, it's not very expensive. Right. Put it in, and I said, well, let's go to speed test. So we go to speedtest.net. We were right there before. We go to another, the closest Comcast in this little coastal town comes from 100 miles away. And so it comes through the valley, comes through like a river ravine. So we choose the next Comcast hop. So we go Comcast to Comcast, and I say, start test, and it goes, wham, and it redlines at 120.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, okay, but we're testing Comcast to Comcast. So I do it again. Wham, redlines at 120 down. I'm like, I don't think that's correct. So we choose another, you know, you have multiple nodes you can choose. And so we choose another one and it goes to 30. I'm like, all right. So now we start getting like 30 down, you know, somewhere between 5 to 10 up. All right. Let's check it again. 30 down, 5 to 10 up. You know, and I'm like, that's look more like it. Go back to the Comcast one. Wham! Red lines again at 120.
Did they have a DOCSIS 3 modem and all that?
They did. I think Comcast was having some issues, but they were, I said, if you want to download anything, do it now. But I'm not sure if I haven't talked with him since then. We've been talking about other issues, but I haven't talked with him whether or not he's going to move off. But just getting rid of that old hardware and putting in something new with a newer firmware made a huge amount of difference. And I walked away very pleased. They walked away very pleased. And actually, I just purchased another one for another site today. So,
I got that little TP-Link access point I was telling about. I got a couple weeks ago. It's been up ever since, and it works fine with my the Nexus 7 and my phone, my Android phones. Where the Enterprise HP one, it works fine, but enough. I put it in mix mode. I have to put it in G.
Yeah,
but this new one, the new one works fine.
Yeah, my little TP-Link that I have here as my wireless. It's not my, it's the first top router, but it's not doing DHCP or anything like that. I get network unstable on my phone quite a bit with it. So I've been messing with that, trying to figure out, that. So the other day I think, well, let me go online and look if there's any upgrades. I go online, end of life. I bought it and like 6 months later it went end of life. So, not even 6 months later. I've only been at this new house now for 5 months. So, 3 months later, it went end of life. So I'm looking at maybe upgrading it, which just means it's like, you know, and I got to upgrade it again, which isn't a big issue. It's just money.
I only paid, what did I pay for this? Like $25, $24.
Yeah.
So, and well, this is all, it's working fine.
Yeah, this is all gigabit. And I thought, well, maybe that would help. And it hasn't, the gigabit speeds are fine. I have no problem, very little problems with latency or any of that within the getting out. It's the wireless connection unstable. So that stinks. So we'll have to see what happens with that one. Maybe I'll get another one someday. I just, it's not worth it right now to be changing it out just for the sake of changing it out. I'll probably be messing with the antennas. Maybe, cause it was on BGN now it's BG. Maybe I'll just switch it over to G and see what happens.
Yeah. That's what I had to do with the HP.
So this, yesterday, or was it today? Yesterday, today? I don't know. The Target CEO stepped down due to the data breach. I didn't know that. And I thought, wow.
I heard him talking about something. I caught it in the middle, like on the radio this morning. I didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah. And okay. So I thought, well, shoot. you had the Mozilla guy got stepped down. I mean, completely two different issues. But, you know, CEOs are, they move around quite a bit. But Brian Krebs, which everybody knows, Krebs on Security, posted a blog, and it's called The Target Breach by the Numbers. And, you know, I know that you personally, Mitch, were affected by the Target breach. I know that you had your credit card.
Yeah, my wife, we were there. My wife did use her card, and she just wound up getting a new card.
Yeah. But it's interesting. It starts off at the top, and it says, in bold, 40 million, the number of credit cards and debit cards thieves stole from the Target between November 27th and December 15th. 70 million, the number of records stolen that included the name, address, email addresses, and phone number of Target shoppers. 46, the percentage drop in profits that Target suffered in the fourth quarter of 2013. 200 million, the estimated dollar cost to credit unions and community banks for reissuing 21.8 million credit cards, about half the total stolen. I mean, it goes all the way down to things like 1 to 3 million, the estimated number of cards stolen from Target that were successfully sold on the black market and used for fraud before issuing banks got around to canceling the rest. You know,
that's awful.
Yeah, but it's things like 53.7 million, the income that hackers likely generated from the sale of 2 million cards stolen from Target and sold at the mid-range price of $22.85. It's the median price between $18 and $35.70. So, you know, it's interesting. And of course, they have the one that says zero. The number of customer cards that chip and pin enabled terminals would have been able to stop the bad guys from stealing had Target had put the technology in place prior to the breach without end-to-end encryption and data cards transactions. So it's an interesting article because he just goes through. I mean, it's not very long, and I read, you know, 80% of the article, but he just kind of comes out and says, you know, this one breach cost this much money, this much loss, this much, you know, this much gain for hackers. And sometimes you hear about breaches and you just go, okay, you know, this breach happened and 25 million credit cards were, you know, breached or whatever. And you go, well, what does that look like in a financial, you know, we as consumers, we just go, okay, well, I'm glad nothing was stolen out of my pocket. But what does that look like, you know, to the business? You know, we look at
catastrophic.
Yeah, we look at, you know, the crypto prevent thing that happened in December with a client of mine that I got called in on. You know, they were down for days. And when a multi-million dollar company goes down for days, you lose a lot of money. So
sucks.
It does suck.
Speaking about security, can you talk a little bit about the Internet Explorer flaw, which was, I'm pretty sure it's been patched.
Oh, yes, it was patched.
You can talk a little, yeah.
Yeah.
I even think they put one out for XP, or they said they were going to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we talked about that the other night on the Podnuts meetup. And yes, so what happens is there was a patch. There was a flaw in Microsoft, and it was a zero-day flaw. And what it allowed people to do was to basically take control over a PC through multiple steps. I'm not sure if there were two patches or two flaws, because Adobe released a Flash patch that fixed. Or
it was separate from, I read that. That was separate from, people were thinking that was going to fix the IE thing, but it was separate from that.
Yeah, because it was confusing, because they both came out at the same time, and Adobe said, here's our patch, and everybody goes, woo, good, I don't have to do anything for Microsoft. And Microsoft, wait, no, here's our patch. And I'm thinking,
not
the same, which is good. So, yes, it has been patched, and Microsoft did patch Windows XP. So here's the question. Has Microsoft now gone back on their word of drawing that hard line in the sand, pretty much saying, we're not going to patch Windows XP? Or are they saying, well, this isn't an XP issue as much as a Internet Explorer issue?
They were maybe kind of pressured, because there's so many businesses that still, big businesses that are still using XP, like mine.
Right.
And we got an email from corporate or from IT department saying that it's okay to use blah, 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 you know, IE. And I can't remember if they said anything about a patch or not, but we got something like a week ago.
So. Well, if that's the case, then do we just do big clients? Do we just stop? If you're looking at, you know, upgrading to Windows 7, do we just say don't? Let's just not upgrade. Therefore, by taking that hard stance, we're essentially doing like a sit-in, and we're not, you know, we're not going to let Microsoft not patch Windows XP anymore. We're going to have to force them to patch it because of the amount of XP machines still on the market.
See, I don't know what our company's planning to do. We have a few Windows 7 machines. I'd say we got like 15, 20 PCs in the building there, and maybe four of them, five at the most, have 7 on it. And now I'm figuring that through attrition, they will. Like if a machine just breaks, they'll just replace it with a Windows 7 machine.
Right.
But I'm not sure.
I don't know. I'm just, you know, so we'll have to see what happens next time. You know, something
what
breaks.
I assume you still have clients with XP. What are you doing? What do you recommend?
Most of my major businesses are in the process of upgrading them to Windows 7. Had a client today say she's using Windows XP. What should she do with it? And I said, well, let's get you a Windows 7 box. You know, we start pricing that out. I have another client who all he does is go online. He's a bike reseller. He has a bike mechanic shop and stuff. And I've known this gentleman for years. He does not like being on the internet at all. It's not that he is afraid of the internet. It's that he'd much rather be on a bike, much rather be out hiking, much rather, you know, he's that kind of person where he's like, I don't really care. He gets on sites 1, 2, 3, and 4, and that's all he does. And I said, you know what? That's fine. Stay on Windows XP for you, because it's pointless to go get you a new Windows 7 box when all you're going to do is get on sites 1, 2, 3, and 4. He doesn't use IE. You know, he's got antivirus on there. He had Microsoft Security Essentials, and of course, Microsoft ripped the rug out from that. I did put Avast on, the free version of Avast, and he's up and running and ready to go. No problem. Now, the computer the laptop he has could run 7 quite easily. But it's one of those things. It's like, is it worth my client for them? You know, is it worth them to go out and spend, you know, the $100, you know, to upgrade it? No, not only that, but the $100 to buy it, my time to upgrade it, my time, you know, now they're, they're 6 hours away by car. Do they ship it to me, or do I have to drive down there? You know, it's just, there's a lot of other things that go into it for them rather than it is for a client down the street for me. But what was interesting though, is Avast put out a blog that pretty much said, Internet Explorer users, Avast has got your back for free. And I thought, what? So apparently it goes through and it tells it that they released the vulnerability, and it says Avast gave its word to Windows XP users that would continue to protect them. And then in bold, Avast has issued a new definition update, which addresses the specific Internet Explorer vulnerability protecting its users running Internet Explorer. So Avast put out a patch on their product that will protect you even if you didn't have Microsoft's patch that had not been released yet. Because all it was the flaw was a vector markup language, which hasn't been used in years. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you have a trap door on your house that you forget about, and over time it's just, you know, you don't think about it, but yet you go around and you make sure you get a new alarm security system set up on your home. But you forget about that trapdoor that you had there. And eventually at some point you go, oh my gosh, I completely forgot about this trapdoor and somebody could have broken in our house. It's kind of the same way. This thing sat from, well, Internet Explorer 6 all the way through 11. It sat. Nobody used it. And then somebody said, hey, wait a minute. Here's something old and dusty. Does this still work? Oh, yes, it does. And they start exploiting it. So, and Steve Gibson put out a blog. Steve Gibson tweets a lot. He doesn't really do much on G+. Just basically a reg fix. You just unregister a DLL file that kills that VML. And that was it. He's like, here's how to do it in 32-bit. Here's how to do it in 64-bit. Ta-da. There's the patch. You know, by killing it. But I just thought it was really cool that Avast, has done this. And the reason I think this is cool is that lately I have been, I needed something else because of Security Essentials not running on Windows XP for my clients, I needed to find another, antivirus, excuse me. And, you know, Black Hammer, Jeff Owens, has talked about how he's deployed Avast. Since then, I've deployed Avast at the school. I mentioned that a couple, before on the network here. And I have just gotten a quote today to deploy Avast to another client. And so I'm finding that I'm really liking Avast, and I think that it's kind of my go-to besides Microsoft Security Essentials for computers that have to run XP because there's not, there is a financial, availability to upgrade right now.
I was a big user of AS back in the day, and but then, you know, with Essentials coming out, just the low resources, I've been using that. But I did put it on this. I got it on my i3 because I put it on, that machine I upgraded. But before I, from XP to Windows 7, I had it just because we didn't know when we were going to get around to doing it. So we put Avast on it, but I was getting some kind of error. And it was working, but I think it was because of some things were broke on there. And so I wound up putting Kamado on there. Mm-hmm. But I said, well, let me put Avast on this, my i3, and it's there running. And, I think it talks to you. I think it still talks to you.
Yeah. Welcome to Avast.
Yeah. Used to be was it a girl at one time? Now it's a guy. Or,
I think it's still a girl.
Is it still? Yeah. I often have the audio off on there.
Yeah.
But it was good. I liked it. I mean, I liked the thing. I think I was the only thing at the time, anyway, or still, maybe still now, you can do a boot scan, you know, before it boots the Windows.
Yeah.
And that's, I like that. I like that feature. And I think there's don't they have a, like a sandbox thing too? Can't you, does something run in a, can you have your browser run in a sandbox, or does it do that automatically?
In Avast?
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's some other nice utilities on there. I forgot what it is. I haven't had any time to mess with it. Keep on forgetting about it. But they got some, I mean, if you go on their site, they have some like separate utilities and I'm forgetting what they are, but they have some good stuff up there.
Yeah. I mean, even the free one, it gives you some, you know, anti-spyware, anti-rootkit, you know, some stuff. So
rootkit, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I'm really new using it. Like I said, it's deployed as a corporate level to the school. But, you know, I thought I'd be messing with it more. You know, I like my Security Essentials. If Security Essentials run on it, I'll throw that on there and still Malwarebytes. But I'm starting to lean towards this one to see what it's doing. And this will be my, like I said, my first non-free version because it's free. That's the one thing why the school chose it, is that it's free for education. So if anybody listening is working in education and you need an antivirus, Avast will give you it. So I couldn't go back to the school and say, well, here's how much it would cost for, you know, McAfee. Here's how much it would cost for Sophos or whatever other version.
Are you talking about it will give them the free version or their paid version?
No, the business version they get for free. So I've got the whole central console, everything. So it was kind of hard to turn that down.
Oh yeah.
I mean, free makes it difficult. So Avast will, if you were running Avast, you've been protected at least a little bit,
Yeah, I figure you can run that, and I don't know if you ever mess with Sandbox EIE.
No, I haven't really.
You can protect yourself with that. You know, you have your browser set up in that, and that always, I try to get infected with that, and I could never get infected with that. And have that and an antivirus, you should be in good shape.
Yeah.
And I put that AppBlock Plus on all my browsers.
Oh, yeah.
Chrome. I don't. Do they have it for Internet Explorer too?
They do. And I believe they have a Firefox extension as well. So AdBlocks Plus works out really well.
It all helps.
Yeah. Grant Tech says we use it at several schools as well. I think he's referring to Avast.
Right.
So the one other couple things I came across was one called patchmypc.net. And the reason I came across this one was, okay, so I have deployed the Windows Software Update Services at a lot of my clients who have it. And what that allows me to do is it allows me to update Windows and Office products, Microsoft products, that. But what about things like Firefox, Java, Shockwave, you know, those kind of they kind of hang in the background until somebody does anything with them or they don't get updated at all. Now, I have some monitoring software that I use as well, and I can update those, but the clients have to pay for those. So if you're just needing a couple of machines, there's Patch My PC, does a security patches, and it'll go through and basically check what applications you have installed and then give you download links to do that. And then you could just go, oh, I see that I need a new version of Java or Shockwave. You know, you could do the same thing by going to Nynite, downloading, you know, clicking them, and then saying run, and it'll update if there's any updates. So that's kind of cool. The other one that I have used this one in the past, it's FileHippo has one called Update Checker. And that one is the same thing where you run it. It's just a local, you can have a local portable executable. You run it, it scans what files you have on your network, or excuse me, what applications you have, and then says, oh, I see that your, you know, ImageBurn or your Skype is out of date, gives you a direct download link from FileHippo. You download it, you install it, then, and you could go from there. So I don't know if PatchPC or patchmypc.net is any different. I'm not sure. Like I said, I haven't used it other than the fact that it looked kind of cool. But if it could do like a Nynite type style where it could update all these patches at once or download an installer, that'd be cool. It looks like they have a portable USB style you can take with you. So I thought I'd check it out, throw it out to you guys and see if anybody else has used it. If you have, let us know, throw us an email. Speaking of emails, we have one. This one I've held on to for a while. We just haven't had time with some shows, and then Matt Rainey came on. But it's kind of a long one, and it kind of goes. It looks like he kind of jumps around, covers a lot of topics. And so I'm not going to read the whole email because there's a lot of things where he describes a computer build, and he kind of itemizes everything. But the email will be in the show notes, so you can definitely go back and read it. This is from John. And it says, I had a stroke of good fortune the other day that rarely happens. A friend of mine brought me a system, HP P6310Y desktop, Windows 7 with a dead motherboard. All of their components were fine. I ordered a cheap replacement from Amazon, through your Podnuts link, of course. And when I went back to hook the board up in the case, everything connected and fit right in the motherboard without having to hack anything. I did lose two memory slots, but I could live without that. And he goes in to say what kind of motherboard and the personal stats on the system. He says, just like anything else, I think all have good and bad products like printers, and I'm a bit surprised that you don't see this too, since you all do PC repair in some form. Perspective. I'm running a RAID 5 disk array on 4x3TB Seagate drives. I've heard lots of stories, but those drives have been rock solid over 2 years. So do Seagates really suck, or are the vibrations, power spikes, on and off cycles affecting them? I own 3 2TB, 7 3TB, and 2 4TB drives now without any failures. Am I lucky? All consumer grade hard drive. SSDs drives do bring a lot of life back to old systems, but they are getting really cheap. I rarely see systems here that use more than 20 gigs of personal disk space. 120 SSDs work great on those systems. I just updated solid but older Toshiba laptop running Vista and had it booting in less than a minute to the browser on Google. Disk was imaged with Acronis and restored to SSD, so it wasn't a fresh build. High IO tasks could be allocated to SSDs if you want to see performance, so boot, browser caches, etc. Windows 8. Geeksters are people who want to who help with tips and tricks to make life suck less. Talking about Windows 8 from a user perspective isn't helpful. Try this. Try to manage your wireless SSDs in Windows 8 versus Windows 7 if you have to do it from the command line now. So he's saying that, okay, so I will go back through all these after I read this. PC security. Microsoft Security Essentials will keep you safe. Really? I doubt that any product can truly do that, but the paid-for products seem to do it better. Instead of cleaning up your system after the fact of infection, try putting a proactive products on there. More perspective here. Love Avast. Malwarebytes, CCleaner, Adware, JRT. After upgrading a frequently troubled system to Avast, Avast is, and Malwarebytes Pro, $15 lifetime on sale at Newegg. That has since gone up, but and changing their DNS to OpenDNS Family Shield. Not much of anything else has penetrated in the last 5 months. Looking forward to Ubuntu 14.04 LTS. Build my new VM with TeamViewer for surfing. Love the show. Love learning new tips and tricks, John. And so, John, that was a really cool email because you gave us, oh man, there's a lot to talk about. You gave us a lot of stuff on there. Great. That is really cool about the new motherboard. You know, it's, I love it when a plan comes together and you get a board and it just fits in the case and everything works. And that is awesome.
But he said he lost two RAM slots. I was lost on that a little bit.
Yeah.
How did he, it must not have been an identical board.
Or? Well, yeah, it must not have been an identical board. It looked like he ordered, it was an HP board and they put an MSI board in there.
Okay. I got you.
So it's not like most of the time, if I have to get a new board for an older system, I will go, you know, I'll eBay the exact board. So it'd actually be like I think Dell has some Asus boards in there. I'll get the exact board. This one looks like it fits. So he must have gone from four slots of RAM to two.
Right.
So.
Right.
But it doesn't say how much it maxed out as. So.
Yeah. I had to do that on an E machine before.
Yeah.
And the reason why I did that, cause I wanted the hard drive to match everything, so it wouldn't, you know, to make it all legal and everything. Because I could have gotten one of those off board, one of the different boards, and probably spent $70 less. But then it might not, you know, something might have happened with the, I don't want to have to reinstall Windows and whatnot. So I used the same board, paid a little bit more money, but everything worked. It just worked.
Yeah, well, I had a client that his old off-the-network Windows XP that he had to use, there's some data on there, went belly up. Called up one of my friends who had another Dell machine of exactly the same. And I told him, you can keep the hard drive, you can keep the RAM. I just need the motherboard. And he gave me the chip and the processor and all that kind of stuff just came with it. All I did was take the RAM out of the other machine. I didn't even swap the motherboards. I just swapped components. Hard drive, RAM, Windows 7 came up. Everything was working fine. In my notes, I just changed the Dell service tag. And I'm like, here you go. Here's your new computer. Back up and running, logged in, no problems. That was pretty cool. John goes on to talk about how SSDs bring a lot of life back to old systems. And that is true. If a computer can, you know, that is a great way of bringing, adding some more speed to an older system is with SSD. Yeah. 120 gig hard drive, 120 gig SSDs now are under $100.
Yeah. So you can get like 240. I've seen them at Micro Center for maybe $120 or something like that, maybe a little more.
Right.
I'm on an i7 right now, and I do have a 120 gig SSD. But I might, you know, I have a Core 2 laptop that I use, MSI laptop I use quite a bit, and it's just getting slow. But everything's all right on the hardware. Nothing, you know, it's not failing any tests. But I'm thinking I might put an SSD in there.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what you're going to do with it. If you have a computer that's constantly reading and writing, reading and writing, reading and writing, you may not want to do an SSD just because of the life of the SSD,
I don't see, I turn everything.
Game. What would that cause?
Do you use the full version? I mean, yeah, the pro version of Malwarebytes.
I have the pro version of Malwarebytes. Yeah.
Is it a little slow booting up with it? No,
it has been a bit slow to boot up in the.
See, it's on that laptop upstairs, and but it does work well.
Oh yeah, if when it's booting up and you can get to the place where you can actually see your processes, it's the mbam.exe or something like that service. That's the Malwarebytes service, and you'll notice that right off the bat, it kind of taps out the system, but then it eventually will die down. I have had it happen where it actually will kill the system so much that I have to remove it, reinstall it, and then it's like, oh, okay.
Really?
There's
a delay in there, and I was playing with it to delay the start, and the next time it wasn't there where I checked it off. I could have sworn I checked it off, so I want to play with it some more.
Yeah.
And a couple times it doesn't load. It's there, but it doesn't show on the taskbar. System tray.
Right. And he does bring up a good point where, high allocations should be your SSD. So if you have a major machine that you're going to do something with, maybe put the OS on your SSD and your data on a spinning drive. That way, you know.
That's what I do. That's exactly how this set up.
Yeah.
Everything I save goes to like the audio file for here. It's going to go onto the regular record drive.
Right. Now he, now here's where he hits a, I saw you, I heard you chuckle when he says, geeksters, people are people with, geeksters are people who help with tips and tricks to make life less suck less. Talking about Windows 8 from user perspective isn't helpful. I don't know how to talk about Windows 8 from, I don't have,
Fred's not here.
I don't have any tips and tricks for you, unfortunately, about Windows 8 because, I install Classic Shell. I don't know. Because it's Windows and, you know, everything we apply, whether it's, install an SSD, add more RAM, malware bytes of Avast, Microsoft Security Essentials, they all can be applied to Windows 8. So we talk about Windows 8 because, you know, it just, it's getting better. But it does have its flaws still. And really right now it's just kind of an easy thing to pick on. So and I like hearing Tim just get him all up in a roar about it. It's, so.
Fred's the Windows 8 fanboy.
Fred does like Windows 8. And you know what? The more I've used it, the better it is. Am I pushing it out to my clients? No. If they ask me, can I, you know, I got an email today, essentially, saying, we're looking for two cheap laptops. Here's a link. What do you think? And it's to Windows 8 Costco, like Toshiba Costco machines with Windows 8 on them. I said, if you've never used Windows 8, well, and these are going to be used for training. So this wasn't going to work out well for these clients. One, it's for training. And when you sit down with a group of people and you say, okay, here's your machine. Now follow me on this machine, but this machine's Windows 7 and you're running Windows 8, there's going to be a problem. The other thing is the application that they need to be training with is a web-based application. They are having issues and you have to go back to IE9 for this application to work. It doesn't work in compatibility mode. Windows 8 doesn't even support IE9. So we had to just say, you know, we're going to have to go to Windows 7 for this because we can't use 8 because of those problems. And it's just easy to pick on Windows 8 right now. So, to manage your wireless SSDs in Windows 8 versus Windows 7, you do it from a command line. I didn't know that. I've been able to join some computers with a wireless to Windows 8 on the GUI interface. So I don't know. I'll have to look at that. So Microsoft Security Essentials will keep you safe, really. I doubt any product can truly do that, but the paid-for products seem to do it better. Probably when let's agree on that. Paid products will protect you better. Sure, let's say they do that today. In 2 months from now, when the new AV sources release again, it probably won't. It changes all the time. I don't necessarily think that paid products are better. You know, that's not.
I mean, you would think so. You're paying money. There's got to be a difference.
Well, but that
you would think,
right? And that's some of the flaws that we run into when you try to talk to people about installing, say, Linux or LibreOffice, for example. Well, but it's not paid for. How can it? You know, but you got to use Microsoft Office because you pay for that. Well, paid does not equal better. Now, there are great products out there that are free. LibreOffice. You can run LibreOffice on a Windows box just fine. So, and Microsoft Security Essentials is a great product. And it's free. Avast, you say later on here, you say you love Avast. Avast is also free. So, you know, I don't know if necessarily paid products are always the best answer.
Well, it's, you know, it's not only that. It's, you know, what you do, what the user does. So that's a big part of it, too.
Yeah. Because he says, I mean, I don't mean to call you out on this, John, but you say for more perspective here, you love Avast, Malwarebytes, CCleaner, Adware Cleaner, and JRT. Free. Malwarebytes is free. CCleaner is free. AdCleaner is free. And JRT is free. There are plenty of paid products out there that will do what Malwarebytes does. There's plenty of paid products out there that will do CCleaner, Adware Cleaner, and JRT. But we use the free products because they just work. They're great. And they do the job and they're free. So. Yes, Ubuntu, he talks about going to OpenDNS. I use OpenDNS as well. The school uses OpenDNS. That's a great product. So if you're looking for any content filtering, check out OpenDNS. And Ubuntu 14.04. I tried. I used it for a little bit. I couldn't get it to work right. And part of that just is time. They've made enough changes on there where not everything that I use is available yet. And part of that is because.
And you're back on 12.04?
All I did was just put my 12.04 hard drive back in. You know, but it's getting better. You know, an application that may not have been available when 14.04 came out, now 2 weeks later is available. So, you know, that, you know, having, you know, a Linux-based operating system kind of has a double-edged sword. You get to do stuff. You get to install some applications for free. You get to kind of have that heightened security with it that comes with it. But on the other hand, you know, you don't necessarily get everything right away because they release the distro. People have to, you know, recreate their apps and stuff for it. And you just kind of wait. So, you know, there's no reason to wait, to not to wait. 12.04 is going to be around for a long time. It's still going to be, you know, 5-year long time support or long, with the LTS, it's the long term support. So I have time. I'm not going anywhere. And but I wanted to, I was trying to rush it because I wanted new and shiny.
Let me ask you a question real fast. When you say long-term support, what does that mean?
That means
if I have a problem with mine, what do I do?
Well, it just means that they're going to keep supporting it as far as the kernel. I believe.
Oh, it's not. It's nothing like I don't contact anybody.
No. That.
Updating and bug fixes and whatnot.
Right. Bug fixes and stuff. Like 13.10 is going end of life like this week or something like that. So. That's what the long-term support is. The ones in between are only good for so long before they stop supporting them. That's what I've got for today.
It's a good show.
Yeah. I'll save
for only 1.5 people.
What? Wait.
I'm the half.
Oh no! Come on, you're a full person to me.
I'm a pizza tech. You know, I don't know what you guys know.
No.
And I made sure of it because I had 4 pieces before it came down here.
I don't know what I'm gonna do for dinner tonight. We have shows and or pictures and stuff for softball. But so if people want to get a hold of us, Mitch, John sent us an email. If people want to send us other emails.
Yeah, you can send an email to, I don't have my banner up and I don't know if I can get it up and I don't remember anything.
Would Jack help out?
Nah, I got it. It's you can send us voicemail at geekchews@podots.com. You can reference any one of us or whatever. And you can send us, that was an email. You can send us a voicemail at 7076-PODNUT. I don't think we had anyone in a while. That's 7076-PODNUT for voicemail.
Yep. People want to get a hold of me, Martin at ObandoComputing.com. Mask Hill in the forums, Mask Hill in the chat room. Also, guys, don't forget to support, PODNUTs, Amazon, PODNUTs.com/Amazon for when you go to buy stuff. Nick Shaw from D7 is a sponsor from us. If you have ever thought about using D7 or are interested in any of that, the way to automate some of the tasks that you do, check out D7. He's got a new version, D7 2. Look at what he's got, because he's a great supporter of the PODNUTs network, and we want to give back to him. So thanks, guys, for coming out. Now, hopefully next week we'll have a full crew. We may switch the time ups again a little bit just to help to facilitate, scheduling and stuff like that. But we'll let you guys know what's going on with that. So until next time, guys, have a great fiscal week. Bye-bye.
D7-2 is here. Go to foolishit.com for more information.